Hari Om to all of you. So last week we covered up to verse number 59, right? And what we have seen so far, that based on Arjuna's question in verse number 54, Arjuna asked, what are the marks of a sthitapragna? Sthitapragna, as we discuss, is one who is endowed with this knowledge, spiritual knowledge, one who lives his life absorbed in this knowledge. What are the marks of such a person? Arjuna wanted to know. The reason being, and also it is important for us to know, that if we follow this spiritual path, what will be the change in our character? What will be the transformation which comes about? Because this knowledge has got to transform the way we interact with the world. Otherwise, this knowledge is only book knowledge. So once this knowledge has transformed me, I want to know what will be the nature of my character, how is the nature of my mind, how do I deal with the world. A sthitapragna is not one who has retired to the forest, but one who is engaged in the activity of life. So from verses 55 up to 72, the closing 18 verses of this chapter, Krishna answered Arjuna's questions on two ways. One, he first answered Arjuna's question giving the marks of a sthitapragna. So he gave what are the marks of a sthitapragna in 55, 56 and 57. These three verses, he explained the nature of a sthitapragna, how he deals with various situations in life. Then from verses 58 up to verse number 68, he will take up the two sadhanas, very important sadhanas that we have to follow in order to convert this knowledge. This knowledge is at an intellectual level. We want to know, how do I absorb this knowledge? How do I convert this intellectual knowledge into emotional strength, so that this knowledge is available to me in times of interaction with the world? And the two sadhanas that Krishna spoke about from verse 58, the first sadhana he talked about was Indriya Nigraha. That means we must have a mastery of the senses. Very important. Otherwise, we will not be able to absorb this knowledge. It is very important for us, for every spiritual aspirant, to have a mastery over the senses. Indriya Nigraha, in some texts you will find it is called Damaha, D-A-M-A, Damaha. Adi Sankaracharya uses this word Damaha. Then the second sadhana that Krishna spoke about is Mano Nigraha, discipline of the mind. Because even if we are able to discipline the senses, there is a lot of wrong attitudes or wrong ideas in our mind, and these also we have to learn to discipline. So both the mastery of the senses and mastery of the mind will help us to, what we call, will help us to receive this knowledge, it will help us to study this knowledge, and it will help us to apply this knowledge. If we cannot control our senses and our mind, we will have a lot of difficulty in absorbing this knowledge. So having introduced the topic in verses 58 and 59, which we covered last week, now let us look at verse number 60. In verse number 60, Krishna gives a very strong warning about the senses, the nature of the senses. And what does he say? If you look at the third line of verse 60, Indriyani Pramathini. Hmm. Indriyani means the sense organs. Pramathini means they are very, very, very turbulent. By nature, the sense organs are very turbulent. In fact, we can look at this word Pramathini to mean a churning rod. You know, when you want to churn something, your cooking pot, you use a churning rod, right? So these senses also are like a churning rod. And how many churning rods do we have? Five churning rods. So what do the churning rods churn? They are churning rods, but what do they churn? What do they churn? They don't churn your desires, they churn the mind. So he says, Indriyani Pramathini, the last line you see the word Manaha. They churn the mind. The senses bring all types of experiences and they get crushed through our senses into the mind. So they are very turbulent by nature. They can churn your mind. That's why he's warning us very clearly to be very careful where you expose your five senses. They are very, very turbulent. Manaha, they can bring all sorts of disturbances to the mind, distractions to the mind. And we have discussed this one distraction as you are sitting here listening to the knowledge with your ears, and suddenly somebody is cooking some nice dosa, idli, chutney, hot sambar, and suddenly what happens to your sense of smell? It is gone. And what happens when your sense of smell has traveled there? Your mind also is pulled along. And when your mind is pulled along, what do you lose? Your concentration is gone. So you can see how turbulent are the senses. One sense we are unable to control. Adi Shankaracharya told us about five animals who are unable to control their senses in Viveka Chudamani. For example, he gave us the example of a fish unable to control its sense of taste and or smell. And when the fisherman drops the hook into the water, the fish is guided by that smell, bites on the worm and instead gets entangled in the hook. A firefly comes to its destruction because of its weakness of sense of sight. It is attracted to bright light, it rushes towards bright light and it ends its life. And poor human being has got weakness of not one, not two, but all the five senses. Any one sense can cause our destruction. So that's why Krishna is warning us about this. And he uses such powerful language. If you see in the last line of verse 60, these churning senses, turbulent senses, haranti manaha prasabam. The word haranti comes from the root word haran, which means to kidnap. It violently pulls away, it kidnaps away, it snatches your mind away, prasabam, violently. What does it snatch? It snatches your mind away. So any one sense, if it is not disciplined properly, or even all the five senses have the capacity to drag and pull your mind away to that direction, to wherever the senses want to go. Right? So therefore Krishna is warning us about these senses, and such a strong warning he gives us that he says in verse number 60, line 2, he uses the word vipaschitta. Vipaschitta means even one who is endowed with wisdom also can stumble if he or she is not able to control our senses. So this is not meant to discourage us. Krishna is saying even a man of wisdom who is practicing self-control, even such a person can succumb to his senses also. Now this is not meant to discourage us, but on the contrary, give us a very strong warning. We must not think that, oh, because a man of wisdom cannot control his senses, then I don't have wisdom, then what's the point of even disciplining the senses? It is something like this. When you come down a hill, coming down a slope, you're driving down a hill, you see a warning sign there. What do they say there? Slow speed, apply brakes. They give you a warning. So they are alerting you to the danger. Similarly, here Krishna is not discouraging us. He is merely alerting you to be very, very careful about your senses. Because he is saying that even a wise person can be brought down if he or she doesn't have a discipline of the senses. So, Purushasya Vipaschita. Vipaschita means a wise person who has no discipline also can come to the destruction. And how destructive it is, he's going to tell us in verse 62 and 63. These two verses are the 8 steps of a downfall. How a person who cannot discipline the senses and the mind, how that indiscipline can lead to a person's destruction. So, now that we are told that we have to master the senses, we have to master the mind, we have to bring it into our control. Otherwise, if you just allow the senses to express themselves and guide your life, you can go to a very destructive situation. And we have seen many examples in society also. Person who cannot control their senses and cannot control their mind leads their life according to the dictates of the senses and the mind can be a very wasted, destructive life. Now, if we are able to control the senses and the mind, what are we supposed to do then? So, in verse number 61, Krishna now explains further. Sarvani, having control, tani, all your senses and the mind, being able to discipline and control the senses and the mind, samyamya, the word samyamya means having mastered the senses and the mind, and understand mastery of the mind means what? What do you mean by mastery of the mind? What is the definition of mastery of the mind? Is mastery of the mind suppression? It is not suppression. Is it expression? Also no. Therefore it is?
Management.
How do you manage? You can't suppress. You can't express. How do you manage?
Divert.
That's what he told us in verse number 59. You remember? He said, Param drishtva nivartate. Whatever your mind, how you want to discipline the mind and the senses, you have to take up a higher value, more noble values. You have to practice more noble thoughts. Mix around with the right company. Go to the right places. Read the right type of literature. So you have to give your mind a diversion. You can't suppress, you can't express, therefore you can only divert. By diversion, what happens? Your mind slowly gets trained, new habits are formed, and then your mind will follow automatically the new habits. So here we must understand, mastery meaning is to divert. So what does one do when you have mastered your senses and your mind, they are totally under your control? He says, Yasya Indriyani, having controlled the senses, for such a person, what does the person do? Tasya Prajna Pratishtita. For such a person, he will be able to absorb this knowledge, and having absorbed this knowledge, you will be able to sit down in meditation. So here he mentions that one, for the man whose senses are mastered, he has become stable. And therefore, if we look at it this way, when we talk about meditation, in the initial stage, we are talking about dhyana. Dhyana means meditation. In the initial stage, when we don't have the knowledge, how do we control the mind? Through meditation of what we call Saguna Ishvara. Saguna Ishvara means what? Saguna Ishvara means the God with form. So you choose any form which you find as favorable, Ishta Devata, and thus you meditate.
Once you absorb the knowledge, you discipline your senses and the mind, you should practice the initial form of meditation, which is called Saguna Ishvara. Then as you are going on the state of meditation, you find that the next stage you reach is called Jnanam. In Jnanam, what you are doing right now is the two steps what we call Sravanam and Mananam. So with Sravanam and Mananam, that is listening and reflection. Now, what is Jnanam? What is the Jnanam that you are receiving? Is it on Saguna Ishvara? No. What is the Jnanam you are receiving? It's on Nirguna Ishvara. So the third stage is here, then Jnanam goes to a higher stage. Having acquired this knowledge about the Nirguna Ishvara, now the meditation will change to Nirguna Ishvara. So at the stage of Nirguna Ishvara, we will recall at the stage of meditation whatever we have known about Nirguna Ishvara, and we will meditate on that. That means the qualities of Nirguna Ishvara. So there is got to be a progress from Saguna, acquiring knowledge through Sravanam, Mananam, and Nirguna Ishvara Dhyanam, which is called technically as Nidhi Dhyasana. That is the higher state of meditation. So the purpose of disciplining the senses and the mind is to then try to control or fix the mind in the state of meditation. Did I discuss with you all the 8 steps of Patanjali Yoga Sutras? Did I discuss here? Do you all remember? I don't know whether I discussed here or the other class. Do you remember the 8 steps of Patanjali Yoga Sutras? Did I discuss it here? Okay, now I might go revision that. Okay, even if you look at Patanjali Yoga Sutras, it contains about 200 verses, and this is the what we call the text that guides us through meditation. Patanjali gives 8 levels before we even reach the state of meditation. So he doesn't say to jump into meditation straight away. First of all, he talks about the first stage is Yama and Niyama. Yama and Niyama means the do's and the don'ts. That means first of all, we have to bring discipline into our life. Similarly, what Krishna is saying here, master your mind and your senses. So what are the do's and the don'ts? There are 5 do's and 5 don'ts. Just briefly, I'll go through a few. One is called Satyam. You must practice learning to lead a life of truthfulness. Speak the truth, think the truth. So lead a life of Satyam. Another one is called Ahimsa. Practice non-violence. You can't practice non-violence. How can you practice non-violence? By not being violent. So, by avoiding violence, you practice non-violence. And this non-violence must be at all levels. Physical, verbal and mental. And thoughts also. Then we have another one called Asteyam. Asteyam means you should not take away other people's possessions. What belongs to others, you should not grab away through force or through deceit. So these are values, qualities. You can look it up in the internet. When you key with Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, you will see all the 5 yamas and niyamas. Satyam, Asteyam, there is what we call Ahimsa, etc., etc. So having practiced all these do's and don'ts, that means to bring discipline into our life, then he says the third stage is called asana. Asana means doing the various yoga positions for the purpose of maintaining a healthy body. So there are various asanas, various positions that we are taught to sit in to maintain this healthy body. Notice he has not even come to meditation yet. He is just starting. So he says start first by disciplining, then going to asana. Then the fourth stage is pranayama. Pranayama means learning simple breathing techniques. And why breathing techniques? Because you notice that there is a correlation between your mind and your breath. When you are calm, when you are relaxed, how is your breath? When you get agitated, when you get angry, you huff and puff away. So there is a relation. So using pranayama also to keep the mind under control. Then the fifth stage is called pratyahara. Pratyahara means now you try to slowly bring your mind into focus. That means we are talking about Saguna Ishvara form. So that means something like when you take a camera and you want to take a photograph or something, you try to bring your camera into focus, right lighting and etc. and all that. So here is just the start of practice. You are trying to bring your mind and focus on something. You will find your mind running away, you bring it back again, it goes running away. Then comes the sixth stage called dharana. Dharana is then fixing your mind on a particular object for at least a little bit length of time. Here you practice, here you try to fix your mind and see how long you can hold your mind on that again. Again you find your mind wandering in and wandering out. Right? Then and only then it comes to the state of meditation which is called Dhyanam. And you notice the chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita is called what? Dhyana Yoga. It is the actual meditation. Where, what is meditation? Definition of meditation is fixing your mind on a single thought for a period of time. So if you are able to maintain this control of your mind, fixing on a particular object or thought or a mantra for a length of time, that is then you are in a stage of dhyana meditation. So notice how he slowly builds it up. He doesn't jump you straight into meditation. That's why many people go for weekend meditation camp. But if you have not controlled all this and you jump into meditation, you find that it is not working. And then this is only the seventh step. If you are able to successfully meditate for a long period of time, then only you reach the eighth stage, which is called Samadhi. So this is Patanjali's Yoga Sutra's 8 steps to meditation. And it starts with Yama and Niyama, which is same as Mano Nigraha and Indriya Nigraha, bringing some discipline into your life. So here Krishna says now that having controlled the mind and the senses in verse number 61, one should then try to engage this mind in meditation. And we start with Saguna Ishvara meditation and slowly move on. Okay. Now, in verses 62 and 63, very, what we call often quoted verses in the Bhagavad Gita, here Krishna is going to tell us the other side of the coin. What happens if you are unable to control your senses? Where, what is the danger? So here in 62 and 63, he shows us the 8 steps of downfall of a person, and it all starts with Dhyayato Visayan Punsa. Now, we must understand one thing. If we are unable to control the senses, we can just walk away from something, isn't it? Something that is too tempting, something that is too attractive. If I want to control myself, I can just walk away. But the problem is, the mind is still reveling in it. This is the biggest problem. So everything starts first with the discipline of the senses. That is your first line of defense. So here Krishna says that what happens if you are unable to control the what we call the roving senses. Okay. And if you are unable to control the sense, how the thought which is already in your mind, it will start to gain momentum. Right? This is what he's going to explain. So he says Pumsa. Pumsa means a person who has no control of the senses. This is what is going to happen. Now, the word
Dhyayato. Dhyayato means one who is meditating. See, it comes from the word dhyanam here. The one who is meditating. Meditating on what? Not on God, but on Vishayan. Vishayan means sense objects. That means he is meditating on everything in the world. Whatever the attractions, the distractions of the world, the person is always thinking and thinking only about those things. The senses are wandering everywhere, the mind is wandering everywhere. That is called Dhyayato Vishayan. Vishaya means all the objects of the world. And what is the opposite of Vishaya, meditation on the world? What is opposite of that? What is opposite of meditating on the world? Meditation on God, right? So that's called Ishvara Dhyanam. We call it Ishvara Dhyanam, right? And already dwelling on the meditating on God is so difficult. We all know when we sit down for meditation, the mind has a tendency to run. So dwelling on worldly objects, we are experts, right? Film star meditation, food meditation, and all kinds of other meditation. So you can see, if you keep on meditating, or either when we say meditating means your mind is always on the worldly objects. And what is the reason we are searching, or rather our mind is focused on worldly objects? What is the reason? Why do we keep on going outwards towards worldly objects? Do you remember the chart I drew last week? Because of the emptiness, because of our own emptiness, you remember the chart I drew last week? You recall that the more desires you spring up in your mind, what happens? Forgot already. The more desires you spring up in your mind, what happens? You forgot the chart I drew last week.
Yeah. Again, revision again. Yeah. What happens when
attachment?
This is the objects of the world. This is the mind. And where is the Atman? Atman is also within us, right? And what is nature of Atman?
Satchit Ananda.
So, Satchit Ananda. Ananda means what?
Bliss,
happiness. Yet, why is it that we don't feel or experience this bliss? It is within us. Why we don't experience it?
Because of
ignorance.
So, correct. Okay, so one is ignorance of what? Ignorance of this Anandam. Another reason?
Doubts.
We always doubt, is there such a thing called this Anandam within? And thus, what happens? Our mind and senses wander outwards towards the world. Right? And when the mind and senses seek the desires from the outside world, as I said, there can be multiple desires, and you are unable to satisfy all the desires, what does it happen? What happens to us? You remember we spoke about the vrittis. That is, our mind is always in a state of turbulence. Until the desires are satisfied, the mind is a state of turbulence. So think about the mind as a clear pool of water, and the sun is shining, the reflected, you can see the reflection of the sun in the pool. So what are vrittis? Vrittis are, we take stones and pebbles and throw into the pure water. What happens to the water? They are ripples. What happens to the reflection? It becomes very, not so clear, right? Unstable. So this is exactly the opposition of the mind. The more we focus our desires outside, we create these vrittis in our mind, the mind becomes, not to say unstable, but disturbed. And thus, the Atman, Ananda, which is inside us, is not experienced. Now, think, When you start satisfying your desires, what happens? You find some happiness. Where is the happiness coming from? Why are you feeling happy when you satisfy desires? Why do you feel happy? You do feel happy. Why are you feeling happy? Is it by satisfying desires you are feeling happy?
Because we have the happiness within
us. So, what happens when you satisfy the desires, the vritti subsides. Every desire you satisfy, the vritti subsides. What happens now? The happiness you are experiencing is not coming from the world, it is actually coming from India. Why you are experiencing this happiness? Because you have managed to what we call to slow down or to what we call to
subdue
the mind. Yes, to subdue the mind. So, but we think that the happiness is coming from the world, not from within. And thus we keep on generating and generating more desires. And we still keep on thinking it is the happiness is coming from the world. So Vedanta is very clear on this. Vedanta says no. The happiness is coming from within. The wise person understands. Therefore, how should I seek happiness? What is the right way to seek happiness? By reducing my desires, by reducing my cravings, my mind comes to rest, automatically I will experience the ananda. But this person, dhyayato visayan punsa, keeps on keeps on thinking about objects of the world. Okay, now thinking about objects is not the main problem. What happens from that? Second line, sangas teshu upajayate. Upajayate, when we keep on thinking about the objects of the world, upajayate, there arises from that object comes sangha. Sangha means now comes some attachment. I keep thinking about that, thinking about that, thinking about that. That continuous thought of an object or person, right? We can relate this to our own experiences. We keep on thinking of a particular person or a particular object. Eventually, there forms a kind of relationship. There forms a kind of what we call sangha or attachment now. And that is still not the problem. So, attachment is there. Then what happens? For a period of time, you keep on focusing and focusing. Now there develops attachment. And once you have a fancy to something, right? Now you have taken a fancy. You have developed a connection with that thing. What happens now? First, you say, you dwell on it. Should I have it? Should I have it? Then forms the attachment, which means what? I must have it. I must have it, I must have it. Then comes what?
Frustration.
Should I have it? Should I have it? Then comes, I must have it, I must have it. Then you have had it. Because then comes what? Then comes the third line. Sangat, from that attachment, sanjayate, now arises from that attachment, what? Kama, that is desire. Now comes the desire. Initially there was no desire. When you wanted something, you could have nipped it in the bud. At that point, when you were looking at it, you could have just nipped it in the bud. But now when the desire has arisen in you, that I must have it, now this is where the problem starts. So, sangat samjayate kama. Now this kama, this desire is there. This is what is going to drive you to action, isn't it? Because now the desire is there, you have to do something about it. Either you have to eat that ice cream, or you have to buy that car, or you have to buy a house, whatever it is. And it is very wonderful in a perfect world if all our desires could be fulfilled, isn't it? There'll be no trouble at all. No need for Gita classes. Everybody is happy. Every desire I have, I can fulfill it. But we know that is not reality. Many desires are there. Some I can fulfill, some I cannot fulfill. So, now from here, desire can take two directions. One, I fulfill my desires. The matter ends there. But what Krishna is looking at,
those desires which cannot be fulfilled. Right? Those desires which cannot be fulfilled. And that is the main problem. Because the more desires you conjure up, due to limitation of time, due to limitation of money, due to limitation of resources, you are unable to satisfy every desire. And thus, what happens now? From desire, fourth line, karma from the desire, abhijayate, arises krodha, anger. And this krodha, anger depends, the intensity of the anger will depend on what?
Intensity
of the desire. So if it was a mild desire, you cannot get it, okay, you can forget about it. But if the desire was so intense, and we have seen what they call like crimes of passion, example, somebody wants a woman and she decides to marry another man. The desire was so intense to marry her, but she chose somebody else. What does he do? Ends up killing the woman. So you can see where the uncontrolled desire or unsatisfied desire can lead to. That's why there is another definition for desire. It is called temporary insanity. Isn't it? Because when we are unable to satisfy the desire, we lose control of our very faculty of the intellect. The right thinking goes out of the door. So that's why anger by itself is very, very dangerous. Okay, now the problem again doesn't stop there. So the next verse 63, he connects up now. So first there was only dwelling on self, sense object. The whole trouble started from dwelling. From dwelling there developed attachment. From attachment developed
desire.
From unsatisfied desire developed anger. Okay, now what happens? Verse 63. Krodha, from anger, bhavati sammoha. Sammoha is delusion. Now, what is this delusion? Delusion basically is delusion is when we are in the grips of anger, we are not thinking clearly anymore. Right? When that anger overpowers us, we are not thinking clearly. Therefore, no matter who is in front of us, it can be an elderly person, it can be your guru, whoever it is, what happens? You just shout at them. You might even hit out at them. Children even hit their parents also in the fit of anger. Because why? You have lost control. Moha means you are no more in control of your faculties. Because anger has started to overpower you. So from anger comes some moha. There is no clarity of thinking, right? You forget who you are. That's why the word temporary insanity comes in. Because for that moment, for that few seconds or for that few moments, you really forget. You don't act the way you should be acting, the way you should be behaving. So you say, so what? So what happens if I lose my anger? So what if I shout a few words? Then it doesn't end there. Next line again. Sammoha smriti vribrahma. If you keep on losing your anger again and again and again, continuously losing your anger, then smriti means your memory. Memory of what? All the good values that you have been taught. Decency, honesty, respect for people, respect for society. All the smriti means every good value that you have been brought up with. This anger is so powerful that you keep on losing and keep on losing your anger. And don't forget, when you lose your anger and you get your way, what you want, what happens? Every time you lose your anger and you are able to get what you want with your anger, what happens? You will try to use your anger again and again and again. It is not going to get any better. It is going to get even worse. So everything that you have learned, all the good values, all the culture, the upbringing, everything is gone. So, sammoha smriti vribrahma. And then, all the decency, all the right way of living, everything is thrown out the door. So, anger has a power to suppress all your teachings, all your previous good thoughts also. And then, it doesn't stop there. Third line, Smriti Bhramsha, when you have lost all the memory of the past good thoughts, Buddhi Nasho, means your intellect is gone. The Buddhi, your intellect is totally destroyed. It doesn't work anymore. It doesn't work anymore. There is totally no hope for you already. Right? And because why? When the intellect is destroyed, why is that the most dangerous thing? When your intellect doesn't function anymore. Every time you lose your anger, keep on losing your anger, it totally destroys your intellect. And what is the biggest problem when you have lost your intellect? What? What separates you from an animal? Isn't it? The only thing that separates a human from an animal is because we have the capacity to use our intellect, or we have been given an intellect to use. But if you lose the capacity of using your intellect, then there is no difference between you and an animal. And then you say, so what? So what if I lose my intellect? Right? Next birth is still there. I can come back again. But don't forget, when you lead the life of an animal or with animalistic instinct, you know, sometimes you can see this. They say the fellow's face looks like a bulldog. Right now, because every time so angry, like a fierce, like a bulldog. So what do you think is going to be your next birth? See, that where your mind is, where your vasanas are, in that direction you're going to take your birth. So you have to be very careful. When you lose the capacity of intellect, you behave in an animalistic way, that is your destiny of your next birth already. And then, that's why there's a beautiful Sanskrit proverb. It says, Vinashakale Viprit Buddhi. Vinashakale, Kale means when the time for your destruction comes. Vinasha, your time is Kale, time for destruction comes. You know what's the very first thing God takes away? Vinashakale Viprit destroys your Buddhi. The first thing that is taken away from a human being is the intellect. Once the intellect is gone, there is total destruction only for the human being. He doesn't know what is right, what is wrong anymore. You can tell him whatever you want, it is not going to work for him. So, Vinashakale Viprit Buddhi. The first thing that is removed from you is the Buddhi. And that means your total destruction. So, the last line now says, Buddhi Nashat Pranashati. When you've lost the capacity to use your intellect, the whole human life is gone. The whole human birth is wasted. And it all started from what? Huh? Just the dwelling on sense object. You're unable to control that dwelling on sense object. I must have this ice cream. And it all starts from there. Right? And we are talking about, and you may say, no, this one cannot happen to me. I am in full control of my senses and mind. But we have seen great people, in the magazines and newspapers, you can read people who are not able to control their senses and their mind. They may be brilliant people, they may achieve a lot in society, but one slip somewhere, you can see they fall down straight away. So even bright minds also have a problem when it comes to disciplining the senses. Right? Just because intelligence is there, that is gross intelligence, that is worldly intelligence, that does not mean you have spiritual intelligence. There's a difference between spiritual and worldly intelligence. So here, Krishna has given the 8 steps downfall of a person, comes to a total destruction, and it all starts with being unable to discipline the senses and the mind. Okay, now the question is, how does the Sthita Prajna now avoid this? If we want to not fall into the trap of these senses guiding us, then what should we do? So in verse number 64, Krishna takes up the exercise about what we should do. And the first thing he mentions in verse 64 is Raga Dvesha Viyuktaistu. First of all, you have to take care of your likes and dislikes. Because all of our lives is led by what I like I do, what I dislike I don't do. So likes and dislikes means what? Leading our life by the senses, leading our life by the mind. Because it is the mind which is which is the one that generates all your likes and dislikes. That's why earlier he gave us the example of a turtle. The turtle withdraws the four legs representing the four legs and the tail, which represent the five senses, withdraws the head, which represents the mind, under the protection of the shell, which represents the intellect. So you have to lead your life by not the mind but by the intellect, because it is only the intellect which is going to tell you what is right, what is wrong. And how do you sharpen the intellect? How do you strengthen the intellect? Only by knowledge. There is only one way, and that is by knowledge. The more you read, the more satsang, the more you mix around with the right people, the more you read the scriptures, the more your knowledge gets more and more firm in you. Your intellect gets stronger. And that knowledge, of course, has got to come from the scriptures. That's why in chapter 16, if you take a quick look at chapter 16, the last verse, page 289, verse 24, chapter 16, verse 24, page 289, what Krishna told Arjuna: therefore, let the scripture be your authority in determining what ought to be done, what ought not to be done. Knowing this, you should act only in accordance with the sanction of the scriptures. So, with creation, we will discuss this in chapter 3, but I'm just discussing it to you now. In chapter 3, Krishna will say that he created the world using Prajapati. Prajapati is actually the creator who created the world. Prajapati is another form of Brahma. And Brahma arose from the navel of Vishnu. So the first thing that came from creation was Brahma. When Brahma came, the first thing he did was he bowed down to Vishnu and requested for knowledge. So that's why Brahma has how many heads? Huh? How many heads? 4, 10, 6, 8, 12. 4 heads. Why 4 heads? 4 Vedas. He was given the 4 Vedas. So that's why he has got 4 heads. So once he received the 4 Vedas, he created the world with knowledge. He not only created, he gave it knowledge how to live your life. So it is our duty, since we are also created by God. And just like you go to a electronic shop, you buy a equipment, with the equipment they give you a operating manual, so you know how to use the equipment correctly. Since God has created us, who will have the right operating manual? God only will have the right operating manual. So you should learn from God's scriptures, how is the right way I should lead my life. Once you follow the life of Dharma, once you follow that life, you cannot go wrong. It is only when we violate dharma, that is when we pay the price. So here also Krishna says, raga dvesha viyuktestu, that one should be in control and not give in to your likes and dislikes. One should lead the life of, if not likes and dislikes, how should I lead my life? If I don't follow my likes and dislikes, how should I lead my life then?
Thankful.
What is right, what is wrong? What is dharma, what is adharma? That is what should guide me. Not what I like, I do. I may like to sleep late and get up late. Right? But what do the scriptures say? Sleep early and get up early. That is right and wrong. So if I follow dharma and avoid adharma and don't follow my likes and dislikes, then I have got nothing to lose. I am following the right way of living. So, raga dvesha viyuktaistu. And and this person is not one, again, here he is very clear, Vishayan Indresh Charan. The person is moving about the world, not one who is withdrawn from the world. So one who is engaged with, you may have different possessions, you may have relatives, you may have friends, therefore you lead your life according to what is right, what is wrong. Not according to your likes and dislikes. Not raga dvesha. And what else he says here? With his senses under control, free from likes and dislikes, what happens when we lead a life according to right and wrong? Then only comes tranquility of the mind. Then only comes peace of the mind, which he describes here as prasadam. That prasadam is the word he uses there, prasadam adigachati. You get the prasadam is not the prasadam at the temple, but this prasadam reflects to tranquility of the mind, peace of the mind. There is true happiness only if you follow dharma and avoid adharma. When you lead your life according to your senses, what you like and dislike, that is when we find all the sorrows in life come about. So, prasadam adigachati, the greatest advantage is that you will have a peaceful mind and a calm mind. And what is the greatest advantage of a peaceful and calm mind? What is the greatest advantage? Serenity of mind, purity of mind, what is the greatest advantage? Then only spiritual knowledge becomes accessible to you, right? Then you follow the right path of knowledge and you are able to absorb that knowledge, you are able to receive that knowledge. So that is the advantage of having a control of your senses and mind, not leading your life by whims and fancies, not leading a life from your of your what we call likes and dislikes. Okay, now therefore the question always is asked, how do you measure success on the spiritual path? How would you consider that you are successful on the spiritual path? What will be your criteria to say that you have been successful on the spiritual path? Correct. And happy and peaceful mind in spite of not having things, but despite not having things. So we can be happy by acquiring a lot of things from the world, but when we can find that peacefulness, the calmness, the serenity of mind despite not having things, that is when you find that you are approaching correctly on the spiritual path. So in verse number 65, Krishna describes this prasade, this tranquility of the mind. Sarva dukhanam, it destroys, hanam means to destroy, sarva all sorrow. It is the cause of your eradication of sorrows. When we have this tranquility of mind, why we are able to eradicate all sorrows is because we do not depend on outside world anymore for the happiness. Our state of sorrow only comes when our dependence of happiness is on the outside world. Any object, any person, any situation in life, there is a change, it affects us. But to the person who has found that happiness inward, internally, sarva dukhanam, comes to the end of all the sorrows. Sarva prasade sarva dukhanam. And due to this blissful state of mind, due to this tranquility of mind, what happens, he says here, in the third line, you see, prasanna chetasa. With this steady mind, with this fixed mind, very soon, so he uses the word hyasu. Hyasu means very soon. In the third line, you see, prasanna chetasa. When you have this tranquility of mind, very quickly, you find your progress on the spiritual path is very quick. What happens? Buddhi paryavatishtate, your mind or your intellect becomes firmly established in God. So therefore, what is the process? It starts with disciplining the senses, disciplining the mind, avoiding leading your life by likes and dislikes, following what is right and avoiding what is wrong. One achieves tranquility of mind. When one achieves tranquility of mind, you find that you are able to absorb this knowledge, retain this knowledge, and very quickly you progress on the spiritual path. You firmly become established in God. Established in God means you find that bliss within. So the whole discussion started there with disciplining the senses and the mind. The rightful way of receiving this knowledge, why we are not able to absorb this knowledge, is basically because of these reasons. We cannot discipline our senses, we cannot discipline our mind, and we lead our life by our raga dvesha, by our likes and dislikes. So a person becomes firmly established in God means you get the spiritual strength. In fact, that is how your spiritual strength also gets strengthened, when you're able to establish your very mind in God. Okay. Now, we come to verse number 66. In the past few verses, that is from verse number 58 onwards, Krishna told us the discipline to follow, and he told us what is the result if we follow that discipline. In verse number 65, he concluded. Now, in the next verse, he's going to tell us what happens if you don't follow this. So both sides of the coin I explained to you. And you have a choice. If you want to follow this advice of Krishna and this tranquility of mind, and you get absorbed in God. If you don't want to follow, then what happens? If you don't want to discipline your senses and your mind. In fact, I don't know whether I told you all the story of Socrates, who used to go into a shop every day. Did I tell the story yet? Okay. So Socrates used to go into a shop every day, and this shop had a lot of nice things, luxurious things. So he used to go, take up, look at it, very nice, put it back. Look at this, very nice, beautiful, put it back. And looked around the shop, and he left the shop without buying anything. So the shopkeeper was watching him. The next day he came again. Again he started looking at this, looking at that, looking at this. It's very nice, this very beautiful. Put it back, again went out again. Third time he came, fourth time he came without buying anything. Everything is nice, everything is beautiful, but don't want to buy. Fifth day the shopkeeper got angry. He told Socrates, what is this? You're coming every day to my shop. You say this is beautiful, this is nice, but you don't buy anything. Why? Socrates said, the reason I come to your shop is to remind myself that despite not having all these things, I'm still very happy. I don't need all these things in my life. So I just come and have a look and say, in spite of all this, I'm still very happy. So the Sthita Prajna is one who is engaged in society, who sees all this, but understands that it is not by chasing after all these objects, by satisfying my desires, I'm happy. On the contrary, the road to happiness is by sublimating my desires. I will eventually find that happiness. And that happiness, once I find, it will never ever go away from me. Whereas every other external happiness has got a lifespan. So what happens to that person who is unable to control that senses and the mind? This is what Krishna will say. And we must understand one thing, that why do we need the sense and mind control at all stages? At Shramanam stage, when you're listening, what do you need to discipline? Senses and mind, isn't it? For listening, you need to discipline the senses and mind. When you go back, you take out your notes and you go through it, or you try to read the Gita, Mananam you try to do, what do you need to discipline? Senses and mind again. And when you go to Nididhyasanam, that is meditation, what do you need to discipline again? Senses and mind again. So the whole spiritual success depends on us, how we can discipline the senses and mind. Otherwise, there is no Sravanam, there is no Mananam, there is definitely no Nididhyasanam. Okay. So, for such a person who follows a discipline of senses and mind, in the second line you can see, Krishna calls a person Yuktasya. Yuktasya means who is firm on the path. That is a Yukta, one who is firm on the path. Okay? But for the person who is completely opposite, in the first line you see the word Ayuktasya, who does not discipline his senses and his mind. So he's comparing the difference between these two people. The one who is ayuktasya, what happens? He says, the buddhi na asti. There is no development of the intellect. For such a person who cannot control his senses and the mind, the first disadvantage is buddhi na asti. There is no discipline of the intellect. There is no knowledge gained at all. For such a person, cannot practice Sravanam, cannot practice Mananam, you can even forget about Nididhyasanam. And what else he says, in the third line, Nacha Bhavayata Shantir. When you are unable to even discipline this mind, how can you ever get any peace of mind? Your mind is running all over the world. In fact, a beautiful example was given to us in Ramayana. Sita, when Rama was with her in the forest, she had absolute bliss and peace of mind. When did she lose her peace of mind? When Rama left her to go and do something, he heard a cry. Remember, in the forest there's a story. He heard a cry and he said, I must go and help that something. And then he drew for her a line. He said, don't trespass this line. Right? I'm leaving you now for the first time. And he drew a line and he said, don't trespass the line. And what is it that when Rama went away from her, that means thoughts of God go away from us, then what attraction came in front of her? The golden deer. The golden deer is a reflection of all the attraction of the world. We find all these attractions of the world. When we lose our thoughts of God, we are easily attracted to all these thoughts of the world. So, how can one have shanti? Here Krishna says, Nacha bhavayata shantir. How can such a mind ever have peace? Because it is always thinking about all the various things of the world, objects of the world. And asantasya kutha sukham. And for the person who doesn't have peace of mind, how can that mind even sit down in meditation? How can that mind, which has no peace, which has no what we call stability, how can it even sit down and read the scriptures? How can it even sit down and meditate also? So everything boils back to the controlling, discipline the senses and the mind, right? And that's why a lot of people go away to ashrama, you know, for a weekend, like, you know, you go away to ashrama. Then when you come back, what do you say? Very beautiful, you know, I went away for 3 days. You say, I enjoy peace, you know, very blissful, I enjoy peace. You know what's wrong with that statement already? It is in the, I enjoy peace. That means now, what state are you in? So that's why in English they have past is tense, present is tense, future also is tense. So we only enjoy the peace, but we cannot retain that peace. Why we can't retain the peace? Because we cannot give that mind under control. We cannot bring that mind under control. Why we can't bring the mind under control? We don't have any discipline of the senses and the mind. And thus, how are we going to get tranquility of mind? How are we going to get knowledge? How are we ever going to sit in meditation also? So Krishna says, asantasya kutha sukham. Okay. We are going to come back next week, and there are, you can shut this off. We're going to come back next week and complete the balance five verses of chapter 2. So what I would also suggest, since we're already going to cover 2 chapters by next week,